Okay, good afternoon. My name is Linda Nelson. Today is August 15th, 2012. I am here interviewing for the first time Linda and Carl Pittman. This interview is taking place at 9340 North Fork Road, Polebridge, Montana. This interview is sponsored by the North Fork Landowners Association and is part of the North Fork History Project.
And my name is Gary Haverland. I am with Linda today. It is August 15th, 2012. This is the first interview for Carl and Linda Pittman. And this interview is taking place at their home, 9340 North Fork Road, Polebridge, Montana. And it is sponsored by the North Fork Landowners Association and is part of the North Fork History Project.
Well, today we have interview questions for Linda and Carl, and we thought we'd try interviewing the two of them together. They have both been in the North Fork for a long time. So Linda and Carl, our first question is, tell us about your early background. Where and when were you born? Linda, would you like to start?
Oh, I'm Linda. I was born in Los Angeles, California, because there were no hospitals in the desert area where we lived. So I was raised on the Mojave Desert, near the Los Angeles area, and grew up there and lived there for many years.
Okay, I was born June 7, 31, in Collinsville, Oklahoma. Grew up in Oklahoma City. Had scholarships at UCLA, Occidental, earned bachelor's and master's and half of a PhD. That's about it.
And Linda, how about you? You went to school, I know. I remember hearing you say something about being a nurse.
Right, yeah. I went through most of the school. They had no kindergartens at that time, and I was 1 through 12. At two different school districts is all, and then started taking college classes after I was grown and married, and finished a nursing degree in about 1975 or six, and then went to work in the nursing field for 25 years there in Southern California. Two or three different hospitals that I worked in.
Hmm. Interesting.
When did you come to the North Fork, Linda, for the first time, and why?
We came for the first time in the late summer of 1964, and it was because we were looking for some land where we could spend the summers, since we were free in the summer. Carl was a school teacher. So, we were here looking for affordable land that we could get, and it was the year after the big flood, the 1964 flood. And that was our main reason for being here, to find a place to recreate and build something.
Uh-huh.
We were thinking of a campground, but we only did that for a few years here.
But float trips made us the most money. I'd take people floating before anybody else would get on the river.
Is that right?
Yeah, everybody wanted to know how the river was there, and then they'd go see.
So you worked with the tourists?
Well, tourists and people up here, you know.
Uh-huh.
But you know what? The interesting thing about the 64 flood was Mel Rutter got the Hungry Horse News Pulitzer Prize for the flood that killed many Indians on the east side and several whites down there around Kalispell. The whole, that area down, what's it called, that end of Kalispell, that was all underwater. It was a bad flood. And the interesting thing about it, the people up here at Corum saw government cars going through like mad. They said, "What's going on?" So some of them jumped in their trucks and drove up the river, and where one of those trains comes out of the tunnel was shooting water clear across the river. It was that much higher
uh-huh.
than the tunnel, so it was acting like a hose with a lot of pressure on it. So they said, we got to get out of here quick. We got to go warn everybody. So they went down to Corum and told everybody, get on high ground quick or we're going to be dead, you know. Because it was 200 or 300 feet above that tunnel, see. It was really a bad flood. And the North Fork Road there from the bridge down to Pole Bridge had all been washed out, just solid rock, you know, uh-huh. Big old rocks, yeah. That's about all I want to say about it.
Okay.
No, but I'm just curious how you found the North Fork.
Oh, well, we found it through looking in a Stout Realty catalog. They had some cabins and a home with it advertised along the North Fork River. And those cabins aren't there now. They burned in the 88 fire, but they were across the road from the Ben Rover cabin. And they were for sale, so we came to look at them. But yeah. By the time we got here, they had sold.
I'm glad they did, because everybody that stayed in them got 8 by 10 million mosquitoes, because right behind there was a slough, and between the logs about this open. So they just fed them all night long. Everybody came out of there and lost all their blood.
Okay, so what are some of your earliest memories of the North Fork? Linda?
Well, it was a lot of camping at first while we were building. Our son was, he was 6 months old when we bought the land, and we came back the next summer to start building something, so he was about 18 months. And my mother and father came with us. He had built homes all his life, a lot of it. And the weather was pretty good, typical rainy June, and then July and August were nice. We had a normal amount of mosquitoes, and we did have a little raft with us. My father and Carl rafted the river every once in a while for recreation. But we had a lot of fun just building something where nothing had been before and didn't have to do too much clearing. There was a clearing down in front that some logger had a big slash heap down there. So we ended up using that wood out of the slash heap for our bonfires. We had bonfire going pretty much all day long. Uh-huh. And our all evening and through the night and in the day sometimes.
And this is where we are today. Yes. We are sitting on that property.
Yes, same property.
We were pretty smart in those days. We asked the seller, get the people to give us, go to a lawyer, write up rights to the spring all the way up there, the stream. And they did. So they signed it. We got copies of it. So twice I've had to give our neighbors over here who bought 40 acres after we bought our 20 acres a copy of it. I'd be going up to work on my water system. What are you doing on my land? Well, I'd give them a copy of it. I'd say, read this. So they'd read it and never said another word after that each time. See, the stream came through the lower section down here, but I wanted to go all the way up there. I'd get plenty of pressure to run my electric system, which we're on right now. And the water for the showers and everything else, toilets. But go fishing in the park at 5 p.m. in the evening, and by 6 p.m. we'd have enough fish to feed the family, and we'd sit there and eat at 6 o'clock. That's how many fish was in there in those days.
Gee. Yeah, lots of fish whenever you needed fish.
Oh, what was the North Fork like as you remember it in the early days? Of your existence here, the road, you know, the people, etc.
Nice, friendly people. Within a few days after we started camping in here, Frank Evans had come down and he told us a lot about their get-togethers, usually every Saturday night, either at the hall or...
There was a hall,
and sometimes over at the McFarland Guest Ranch, which was still operating in the park, on the park side. And the road was really quite good once the loggers, who were logging fairly heavy up here at that time, they would oil the road usually sometime in June, and once that was done, the road was a very good road and very little dust. You did have to sort of be ready to pull off to the side when a big logging truck was coming down, and
right.
We were told if you had any problem, they would stop and pull you out if you got stuck by pulling over, but we never had that happen. But very friendly people, and get-togethers on Saturday were a really welcome chance to get to talk with other people. And we must have had a radio to listen to once in a while, because I remember we tuned into the news, so it must have been a portable. I can't remember what it was like in one in our camper or in a tent.
We had little army tents in those days. We put netting over it so the kids wouldn't get eaten by mosquitoes. Our shower was some posts laid in the ground and a black tar paper around it, and then 3/4 inch line coming in, wrapped around the ground, sun heated up, you get in there, you could burn yourself if you didn't watch it, you know.
Yeah, that was a primitive hot shower we had.
Everybody would stop and visit with us, you know, and they'd get out of their cars, come in around the campfire, and we'd all visit, you know, and it was quite a show. Later on, I'll tell you a trick I pulled on everybody.
Okay.
As you think back to that period, what other North Fork residents, or did some North Fork residents, make an impression on you? Was there that character that stood out while you've been here in the North Fork?
Yeah. Like I said, Frank Evans was very welcoming and told us a lot of things that were helpful to us. We got to know the Newtons, Frank Newton and Ethel. They had homesteaded up on, I don't know whether it's north of Moose Creek somewhere. And another interesting guy was Wally Nolan, who, he was related to Ted Ross, who owned the store. In some way, wasn't he?
Yeah,
I think he married one of Ted's daughters. And he would
drop in there,
come visit, and he was a really hard-working guy and moved a lot of cabins and
the hostel.
Moved that McFarland main room of their guest ranch over, and which became the hostel.
That's interesting to me. He drug it across the bridge?
Across the river. One log at a time.
Take the logs apart and bring them across the river when it was lower in wintertime. I think he did a lot of that.
He came down here and got a few extra logs for extra spots that got messed up or something. Dot and Cal
Owen. They owned the store for a while.
Bob and Betty Olson.
And the Wirtz family, we would visit with them once in a while, and they'd come by here. And I know Carl bought a pair of their moose skin moccasins that he made, and I guess they shared the work on that. And they quilted all kinds of hide pieces together and made a big, 2.5 foot size pillow that we bought from them.
And it lasted for years.
Put a pillow in there.
It was wonderful.
It was really comfortable.
Every kind of animal you could think. White.
Yeah, deer, moose, and elk hide. That was beautiful. We had that for many, many years.
They'd sit on our porch here, and we'd visit, and the kids were just enthralled with the tales. They told about how Link got killed by the grizzly up there near Link Lake where he lived at. Yeah, quite a story.
Yeah.
Were there any of the homesteaders you knew north of Trail Creek?
A few times we visited, and Carl once bought a little motorized bike from Tom Reynolds.
Yes.
He was a homesteader, I think, a retired ranger. We knew the Holcombs, but they're not north of of Trail Creek and the Wirtzes.
And Ann Henson and Ben Henson, their big place there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Henson family.
Mm-hmm. But they were here way back. He didn't get to town for 10 or 12 years after he'd brought up here, you know, as a kid.
I remember them there.
Yeah, they sent crews to Alaska going hunting from there, on horseback and stuff, you know. Boy, what a deal.
How about any other homesteaders here, near you, near your place here?
I'm not sure. Ladenburg's homestead their land down here?
I don't think so.
I don't know who was the original owner on mm-hmm. some of these pieces. We bought from the Greens.
He was the head of the post office down in Cummings Falls.
He was postmaster in Cummings Falls and Rose Green. They owned all this land here where we bought 20 acres of it.
Okay, so what was daily life like, and how was it different from life in most parts of the country? So you sound like you've given us a little bit of a picture. Is there anything else you want to add to what your daily life was like when you got up in the morning, cooking, shopping, groceries?
Yes.
How was that like?
We had to go to town, Columbia Falls or Kalispell, for supplies. We did some laundry by hand, and by the time we were here 3 or 4 years, we had an old wringer washer that we could use to wash. We had plenty of firewood always for if we wanted to cook over a fire, but we did have a little camp trailer with a little stove that we used too.
In the evening, we would sit around the campfire.
Bonfire every evening,
and
yeah.
The Grizzlies would walk. This is a major path from the park to up this hill here for the Grizzlies. They'd come across the Oxbow here. That's three islands there. And they'd come right up to our fire, look at us, and look at the fire. What are you doing here? You know this right in my way. So they'd go around and go on. Of course, we'd go in the cabin or in the... We had a little cabin built. Grandpa built a little cabin for him and his wife. And we'd get in our trailer and they'd go on. But boy, when our dog's hair raised up, we started going in after that every time.
Yeah, it'd be pretty scary when...
Was it a hard life at that time, do you remember? Was it difficult or easy?
It was harder than being at home, but worth it because we got to have all the beauty and the river and get together with people. So we didn't think of it as hard, but we were just summer residents, so mm-hmm. it wasn't a year-round thing.
In those days, the road was so good. It was nothing for us to jump in the car, go to Trail Creek, and visit with, what's her name, Profox?
The O'Hares.
O'Hares.
Or the Gaffneys.
Gaffneys are wonderful people.
Yeah.
Because the road, no dust, you know. Mm-hmm. This dust, these days, not this year, would go up 300 feet and it fills the river that deep on the rocks, you couldn't even see the rocks. And it was crystal clear before that, you know.
And the river was always a beautiful color and the rocks were clear and you could see fish. Every time you were on the river, you would see a lot of fish down there. And big dollies and cutthroats and whitefish.
Tell me about the North Fork social life, the hall or parties or?
Oh, yes. Practically every Saturday there was something going on. People would get together and they'd always have snacks, unless it was a potluck or something. And they'd use a record player and the generator and they'd square dance till late hours.
Back in the olden days, they'd square dance till daylight, then they'd have breakfast, get in the wagon, and go home.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I forgot to tell you, our nephew was here, and he said he looked up on the internet, the coolest place in the nation nighttime average temperature for the summers is Polebridge, Montana.
Oh, is that right?
42 degrees.
I believe it.
Well, let's see, with all this action going on here in the North Fork, were you a member of any organizations in the North Fork?
The North Fork Improvement Association, that was the group that maintained the hall, and a lot of the people built the hall there, I guess. That was there when we moved here.
That became the North Fork Landowners Association.
Recently.
They wanted to keep everybody out, see.
Mm-hmm.
You saw how that worked.
And I think that's the only organization we belong to.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time.
I think we've already discussed it, but what was the North Fork Road like? We've already gone over that, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Well, one of the things that I'm curious about, too, is how did you communicate with North Forkers? I know Linda said, you said that you had these wonderful dances every Saturday night. Was that an automatic every Saturday night, yeah, a dance, or did somebody come and tell you, or did they leave a note in the mailbox?
Nope.
Or how did you communicate, say, with your friends up in, way up at Trail Creek?
Drive up and visit with them.
We did drive the road a lot more than we do today,
mm-hmm,
because the conditions really were better then than now, once it was oiled each year by the loggers. Mm-hmm. And we sent a lot of notes back and forth through the mail lady.
Mm-hmm. Or mail, man.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only phone available was at the store.
Yes.
And that was it.
What did you do for other fun?
Once in a while we would drive down to Big Fork and see one of the plays they were doing. And a whitefish once in a while would have something going on we'd hear about on the radio. Or we did take the Hungry Horse News too. And two or three times a month we would go in for some kind of entertainment in the valley down there.
Mm-hmm.
I can't recall how we, or when we first made up a schedule of things, but I know that for many years we would, the community, get together for a picnic up at Bowman Lake. Mm-hmm. And the Hayes and Lawson would often roast a whole turkey for that, and people would, it'd be a potluck, and that was it.
Hayes and Ruth were really nice people.
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
I was going to tell you a little bit ago, when we put in our campground, people would stop in, and I'd say, hey, well, when I was putting it in, we had outhouses around. So I had this kid working for me, and the other kid too. But the one kid would get down inside the what's that rock cement thing? The culvert.
Culvert.
Had holes in it, about 5 feet deep, and he'd get down underneath there. We'd hand him boards, and he'd fill in so no animals would get in there, anything like that. And then he'd, ha, 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 you know, you'd open up the lid of the toilet, and he'd, hello, we'd laugh like mad. I said, you know what? Let's get these people that way. These people stopped in to visit with us, like Dr. Hart, Dr. Funk, and they'd all stop out here to visit with us. So we'd sit around the campfire time, then I'd tell them, hey, you guys got to go with me. I want to show you the campground now. This damn county may be digged clear to China. No, I want to show you the campground. So we'd take off, show them the campground. I'd show them our tables and our fire pits and everything. And we'd walk by two of the outhouses. When we'd get down to this last one here, we never let anybody use it, see? But when we would leave, the kids would sit there and keep stirring the fire. So when they'd see us clear out of sight, they'd run out there, lift up the lid on the toilet, and the guy'd crawl down in there, and they'd close the lid, and back he'd come to the fire. And when we'd go by, where he'd see us back here, he'd come back behind us, and I know everything was all set up, see? So we'd come up here and I'd say, hey, you've got see how deep we had to dig this hole to China, you know? I mean, this county's really bad. Okay, so the worst one was Ruth, what's her name?
Lawson.
I opened up the door and held it for her, and she went in there, and I said, here's the flashlight, so she lifted it. I said, look down in there. So she lifted the lid, looked down there, and going, what was his name?
David,
hello. My God, she hit that door, knocked me down, ran over me with her wooden foot, you know, just stomped me in the ground, kept running. She ran about 100 yards. Everybody said, it's just a joke, it's just a joke, you know. My God, she, and another guy knocked me down. It was the other kid's dad. He was a little guy, about 95 pounds. He knocked me down and ran over me, too. I knew it was going to come, you know. I'd open the door and get clear around the back, and he still got me. So that was our standing joke. And then everybody would bring their friends in to get Pittman to show you the campground, you know.
Yeah, we also did some hikes. I remember one of my favorite hiking partners was Helen Ramon.
Oh, boy.
She was a good hiker.
Oh, really?
And we used to get together and go pick huckleberries in August.
Gee, that's interesting. Well, now let's move on to some of the major fires, floods, ice storms, or any other major events that you experienced in the North Fork.
Well, what was that date in the summer when all these trees fell down on the road here? And we was going to town and...
That's fairly recent.
Yeah, what? They will know that too.
Yeah. That was your birthday.
June 7th,
and we had a heavy, wet snow come.
10 or 11 inches, I think it was. Built, knocked trees all the way down. So, what was his name up here?
The big Ralph.
Ralph Thayer had a chainsaw.
Ralph Hemp.
Ralph Hemp. So, he would cut the logs and went to them off the road, saying, we got to town that way. But,
we haven't experienced any flood here. Once in a while, if we get a lot of heavy rain, our hillside will sort of seep water out of it. We're fairly close to
flood
the hill
down
here.
In here.
It'll get wet in the woodshed and things when you're walking around, it'll be in water.
But when the big floods came, it'd pick up the North Fork Road about 100 yards of the pavement and take it out in the field. Just take it out there, you know, 100 yards or so and drop it. There it is, perfect. You know, you could make your road like that if you wanted to. You know?
Did you see that happening?
Oh, no. No, we got there after it happened.
Right.
They had it. We had been to town, came back up and stopped. Don't come in because it's flooding, you know. And so we went around it and came up to down there. What's in this big turn down there?
Rabbit Hill.
And we could see it was a mess then, water coming from the left, not from the right, where the river's normally at. So we stopped, and there's a guy up there, a single guy up near Bowes, that pulled up with his big truck, and he said, what's going on? I said, well, it's flooding. I said, see that water coming from the left there? That's the main river coming in here. He said, yeah, I got to get up and feed my dogs, though. So he went on through. I said, boy, I hope he makes it, you know. He did. Then he sold out later. He died, I think. He said he had cancer. They said he had cancer anyway. And I forget his name. You remember his name?
So your road flooded right here in front?
No. Never got up here.
Down toward Heidelberg and down.
Yeah. Okay.
That's where it went across the road, two or three places there.
Fairly recent. The first 25 years or so, I don't remember any big fires, except in 67 we could see the Huckleberry fire, but that sort of went into the park, didn't come up this way, so until 88 and early 90s, we seldom had any concern about forest fire. Seldom ever saw crews going out to put something down or anything.
Number 18, I'll tell you about.
Interesting.
Fire.
Okay. Yeah, not many other problems.
Were there any other important events to you here?
Mm.
generally pretty happy days at the campground.
Really?
And lots of friends and visiting and lots of hiking.
I didn't think of anything about that.
Okay, next, let's see. Leaders and characters. Sometimes small communities do have their characters. And sometimes...
Well, the hippies came in, they all built up there on... what was I selling that land for up there?
That was on Moose Creek.
Moose Creek, yeah.
Trail Creek.
And they bought a bunch of that land, and they brought in rice and flour and go stay for the winter. Put up these slap two log cabins. You could throw a cat through between them, you know, between the logs. So the ladies stayed till about November. Then the kids left, and about December the guys left. I haven't seen them since.
Do they own land up there, or just...
Yeah. But they just paying on it, you know, part paid down payment on it. That was it.
Yeah.
But some of the young people that came did get land and eventually built and stayed.
Any strange characters that you remember?
Well, if you go by the guy we bought this place from, I mean, he was a salesman. He was crippled up from logging, take about 6-inch steps.
You mean the realtor?
The realtor, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he had in his books the stilt man. Way back when the store was in the park, they had a boat tied up there, and you'd come up on the North Fork side, you'd fire rifles, a one-shot rifle, setting up against a tree there, and then get in the boat, come over and get you, you'd go back over with them, you'd get your supplies, then come back and go up to your homestead. Well, the Wirtzes and all them, Mr. Wirtz, he'd walk to town 50 miles and carry a sack of 40 miles, carry a 50-pound sack of hay, not hay, flour, different foods sources, all the way back. He didn't have a horse in those days. Pretty soon he finally got a horse, though, and that made life a lot easier for him, you know. But forget what I was leading up to here.
Walking the North Fork, huh? How long would it take you when you went into town driving?
A lot of days, less than it took us a few years ago. Yeah. Now it's been pretty good the last few years with the road improvement. But it was not very different from an hour to get into Columbia Falls for us most days.
I was going to tell you about the Stilton Man. This guy stepped out on the porch over in the park there on the store, and he said, "Hey, get out here quick. That nut's, come out here quick. The nut's over on the other side." So they looked out, and the guy had one lodgepole about 20 foot strapped to this leg, and he's strapping the other one to the other leg. He said, "Well, what are you going to do?" "I got it under control, got it under control." So I said, "Hey, we'll come and get you. Just wait a minute. We'll get the boat, come and get you." "No, no, I got it under control." So he pushed off on the bank and made a step, made another step, tried to make the next step, bloop, over he went. And there's two logs floating down up in the air. And then they stopped. He said, "Oh, my God, he's hung up down on a log down underneath there." And so they said, "Oh, we got to go get him." All of a sudden, one of the logs floated off. And they thought, what's going on? Pretty soon the other log floated off. Then here he came up just to going like mad, you know. What was that realtor's name?
Charlie Green.
Charlie Green. I had four of his books. They were really good stories about the North Fork. I loaned them out and nobody ever returned them.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Charlie Green.
If you can get a copy of those.
Author, okay. And he was from here, the North Fork.
Well, he logged up here and everything else.
Okay.
So he knew all these stories, you know. These are really old-time stories.
Did you ever celebrate holidays up here, Christmas, whatever?
No. Well, we came up at Christmas one year, and we went up to, I don't see, the lady's house, the big 2-3-story house up there for dinner, remember?
Oh, the most recent time we were here for Christmas?
Yeah.
Just you and I? Yeah, the Lawrence's place.
Yeah,
but we came back in about 74, 75 and spent Christmas.
And went up to Hemp's. That was quite a story. Staying climbing up that hill there in our little 4Runner.
It was fun to cut our own Christmas tree and
put lights
children
on it,
made their battery. Own ornaments. And
yeah.
Yeah, so that was fun. And we were very comfortable in our cabin and went up mainly to the store area and socialized up there. I remember once Roy Cooper, who was our neighbor here for a while, he had a sleigh, and so he had horses, and he took the kids, and Carl went too, for a sleigh ride up at the store. That was fun.
Yeah, and then the ex-superintendent had a snowmobile. We went snowmobiling.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
How about the 4th of July? Was that... what was that like in those days?
That was fun. We always
had these nuts shooting 10,000 rounds, you know.
Was there always a parade here?
No, this was before the parade, and they had a fish fry every year. Mm. And so the guys would go out in the morning and fish, and I think of it, all the fish they used for the fish fry were fresh from the river
morning.
That morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it
was 100 people, 50 people, 60, whatever there was there.
70 people there. And for a while then, we also added Carl, conducted a skeet shoot for the guys to go up on the old Matheson homestead next door to the hall. And the men would be up there, and I would get games together for the children, and we played games while they were getting ready to fry the fish, and it was the full day. We started working on it from 8 or 9 in the morning until 1 or 2 the next morning. The kids were asleep on the benches at the hall with the square dancing going on, and yeah, it was a fun full day.
I can almost taste the fish.
Okay, now, I forgot that July 4th, wasn't that when the ladies got stuck up here at the north end of our place?
That was close to July 4th. It was
10 inches
July
of snow
3rd.
Then.
Yeah, 1 year.
Well, they came walking by down here, and Dick and I were standing out there. Dick Smith, as my partner, has that big house down there. He's dead now. But we said, "What's up, ladies?" And they said, "Well, we're stuck." I said, "Stuck?" I said, "What are you driving?" They said, "A Volkswagen van." I said, "Oh, you're not stuck. Let's go. I'll get it out for you." So we went up there, and I just rocked it a couple times and got them going, you know. And so we rode them down here. We got out here, and they took on off. But they, you know, it's fun a little bit, and they thought they were stuck, you know. So.
Did you say 10 inches of snow?
Yes.
On the 4th?
Yes.
My goodness. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, now, animals. Either of you have... Or do you remember any close encounters with animals?
Never mind.
Oh. Well, we've had very few encounters, but in recent years, let's see, about 95 or 96, after a flood, there was a grizzly in the field out there near Hay Creek. And it was eating ground squirrels that had drowned in their holes in that field, and he was out there about a month, a big grizzly, I mean a week. And so we hadn't seen it for over a week or so, so I decided it was safe enough I could go jogging again, and Carl used to ride the bicycle along. So we started out, and I had
two dogs
with me jogging too.
And these dogs are great. If they see a squirrel go across a mile down there, they take off after it, you know. Go ahead.
But he was on the bicycle and got ahead of me as he passed Moran Creek, and then a little
it's
ways up there,
so I let it go free fall.
I heard him start to yell a few things, and this big grizzly was coming down the hill on the left side. It must have been 300 or 400 yards that it came chomping its jaws and growling at him.
The trees were about this high, and it was knocking them down as he was coming. Boy, and, he was mad.
Yeah, and he was trying to stop the bicycle and get his pistol out in case he had to shoot.
I had a 44 Magnum.
And he finally got it, but I heard him say, "Oh God, he's still coming." And so he got that out, but then...
She's 100 yards behind me. So
when I got up there to him, the bear stopped on the old North Fork Road, which was in the trees a little bit.
About from here to your trailer.
And it stood up, and it was four of us there, us two and the two dogs. But the two dogs didn't see the grizzly or sense it there, luckily. And so...
Can I tell a little bit now?
The bear went down on all fours in and started walking down the old North Fork Road toward where our house is.
It scared me so bad, charging right at me, you know, coming down the hill. I jumped off. I always face traffic. I was going the left-hand side. He's coming right at me, see? So I jumped off the bike. 1 second later, I had my 44 Magnum in this hand and the bike in this hand. And I'm saying to myself, what do you do? Okay, one in the ground in front of him. That don't stop him. Four into him to the last one in my mouth.
Yeah.
Because if you wound a grizzly, he'll tear you to pieces. You don't want to live. He tore 300 stitches in this guy down here at down below us here. What's his name, Phil, down there?
Edinburgh.
He looked like a zombie in the paper. He's bandaged from his head to his toes. The thing had been shot once before, and there was five of these guys hunting across the field in the trees there. And the end guy, they didn't hear him. They heard some fumbling around over there. And it came up on him, this grizzly just ripped him and tearing him to pieces. So they shot the grizzly, killed it. And they took it to the taxidermy over in Whitefish. And he found an old bullet hole in it. Mm-hmm. So he was mad. He was going to get the next person and just tear him to pieces. Mm-hmm. So anyway, when she came up, he looked at her. He looked at those dogs. Those dogs never saw the grizzly. They kept looking the other way. One of them said to the other one, "Do you see anything?" "No, don't see a thing, you know." Turned dogs.
What kinds of changes have you seen over the years that you've been here? Major changes?
A big decrease in logging, that's for sure. Then we saw, after that, a lot of road deterioration go on, and then increase in traffic and building homes instead of cabins.
Every year, the amount of people, the amount of cabins doubles every year. Mm-hmm. Started off, there was four up here, four people, and they all had different views. They all fought, man, wife. Next year there was eight. Next year the 16, 32, 64, 150,000 now, see. Yeah. Uh-huh. Ever take out now, there's 50 cars put in, 50 cars take out.
Uh-huh. And a little more ease of communication has gone on. Lot of the emphasis, especially with the association, it was called the Improvement Association, and they would work together to try and get the road improved or whatever they thought was needed. And it turned into more of conserving things as they were at
keep
that time.
Out.
And
that's
yeah, I think they thought they could
keep them out.
Keep people
somehow
out of
that worked.
Here if you didn't do any improvements.
Okay, the Forest Service changed their view. The first big fire we had up here, a forester was riding in the back of a pickup truck and a tree fell on him, killed him at nighttime. So they stopped all ever fighting a fire at night. That's the time you fight fires. It dies down, you go in and put it out, see? Mm-hmm. You got to take a few risks in life, you know? Mm-hmm. And but they'd stop that. So when this big fire's coming at us, it'll come over this hill right here by the lower store. Helicopter comes down, he about turns over, and he finally gets out of there, you know. And the Forest Service, they pulled up, and they was camped up here, so they saw the fire coming, so they pulled up the camp and went back to town. Mm-hmm. Every night I'd go down there and look at the thing. It was 200 or 300 feet above the trees. That's how much fire was coming out of it. The gas went up about a mile and exploded over that area and over at Logan Creek too. The people from Whitefish, Kalispell was calling us, what's going on up there? Said it looked like atomic bombs going off, you know. Well, I'd go down at 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, Linda and I, and boy, if it was getting closer, we were getting ready to get out of here. But I had my fire stuff all set up then to fight it, you know. And I'm down there cussing the Forest Service, and the little girl walks up behind me. I'm standing there talking to a local firefighter. They saved every house. The local firemen from Whitefish, Kalispell, I don't know about Whitefish, but Kalispell, Columbia Falls, Corum, all those fire departments, the local volunteers came up here, saved every house, even when the big fire's coming at them, you know. Uh-huh. And so I said, anyway, this little girl walks up behind me and says, can I quote you, Mr. Pittman? I said, well, if you leave the four-letter words out. So she quoted me. So the next day, Larry comes out from the sheriff's command center there and said, look what you've done. I said, well, man, what's all these tents? He said, well, you did it. I said, what? He said, yeah, look here. So I read it. It said, local man says federal government firefighters run every time they see smoke, but local firefighters fight it. So then God told Forest Service, by God, you get in there and fight it. Help all those people all you can. So he told me, go get you a coat, go get you a pair of pants, get you one of them shelters you can get into. And they checked it all out to me, and we got to keep it, see. They got what's set for her, too. They're feeding us now, too. Before that, it was just the wives feeding them, the firefighters, uh-huh. local firefighters and everything. So then they took off the rule, you can't fight at night. They went in and fought fires at night. Just because of that. And that went across the nation, that picture. And I never got a copy of it. I got to get over and get me a copy of it one of these days. Frame it, you know, put it on the wall.
Well, is there anything else you want to add to our interview today, either one of you?
I can't think of anything else.
Carl, how about you?
Nope, I think we got it all in there. Roy Cooper, he was a great guy. He lived next door to us. When the guy for Grizzly came along here, he smelled our mothballs. They'd left it alone, never touched it. Went over there, got his cabin, his tent, his trailer. And you know, over the restroom, there's a little window up there. So he reached up there and tore the whole wall out, see. Went in that way, went into the kitchen, knocked the door out, threw all the cabinets out in the yard, got his grease out of that, one of them, you know, and ate it. Then came over to Mary's. Hit the wall there, hit the back door, knocked it through two rooms there, went into the kitchen, and she put out a few mothballs. He pulled out a tray of silverware, and it banged, so he went out the same door he came in. It's the only place on the North Fork. He broke in 20 or 30 cabins. Uh-huh. The only one on the North Fork, he went out the same door he came in. The first time he went out the kitchen door, you know. Uh-huh. So that's...
Well, now, what is that theory again about the mothballs?
Well, I read this 40, 50 years ago. A guy up in Canada, a logger, said, I got tired of going off in the bush there and putting my sleeping bag down and getting poked all night or my tent. So I decided I was going to sleep on the path that the grizzlies use all the time. But I threw some mothballs out all the way around me, but I was ready to move if they came. He said they'd come down, and then they'd go all the way around, just breaking brush all the way around, you know. So I said, that's it. So ever since then, I've been putting a mothball about every 10 foot from the house all the way around, except when we leave. I drop them on the porch here and around the windows. We had one come in this door. He got to running so fast he knocked that door off. He didn't go in the house.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I think, Linda and Carl, this concludes our interview for today. Gary and I would both like to thank you for sharing your stories with us. I know for me it's been most enjoyable and a learning experience for me as a fairly newcomer to the North Fork, but I can't tell you how much we appreciate taking your time And on behalf of the North Fork History Project, we'd also all like to thank you.
You're welcome.